Welcome to the Hot Nerd Podcast. On today's episode, we're talking about blame fixes nothing. What now? We're in the middle of this mini-series focused on actions around human and organizational performance, so let's jump into that. Welcome to another episode of the Hot Nerd Podcast. I am your host, Sam Goodman, the Hot Nerd LLC. Make sure you head over to the website, www.thehotnerd.com, for fundamentals, learning teams, support, and so much more. Send us an email, thehotnerd@gmail.com, and be sure to follow along with us on all things social media at The Hot Nerd or at Sam Goodman. Welcome to today's episode. Hello, howdy, hi, everybody. Sam Goodman of the Hop Nerd LLC. I'm supposed to tell you that it's Sam Goodman, founder and CEO of the Hop Nerd LLC, founder and creator of Starting Points, Operationally Curious Questions, host and producer of the Hop Nerd Podcast, international, globally recognized consultant and keynote speaker, best-selling author on all things human and organizational performance and doing safety better, not suck, making safety suck less. I don't know. You know who I am and what I do. I mean, maybe that's for you noobs out there that are just joining us. But welcome. I hope things are going great for you in your neck of the woods. I am kind of here, there, and everywhere, doing my thing, helping organizations operationalize human and organizational performance, helping organizations with operational curiosity and learning through HOP and our Better Questions framework with Starting Points. If you want to check out Starting Points, and I think that you do, if you don't know Starting Points, cruise over to thehopnerd.com/SP. That is SP as in Starting Points. Boop, right on the nose. Yeah, thehopnerd.com/SP, and check out our original Operationally Curious card decks and learning journals, and check out options to join the ever-growing list of organizations around the world taking our cards, licensing them, customizing them, branding them, and us working with them to come up with specific better questions for their organizations. It's just, they're just awesome. They're just awesome. I see posts constantly on the interwebs of people using our cards during workshops. I see them constantly. Pictures, people out in the field having pre-event operationally curious conversations, learning and improving and innovating before things go sideways. I get your messages, I get your DMs, I get your phone calls and your texts, and often it starts with, why the hell didn't you tell me about this sooner? Yeah. So if you're wondering why I'm talking about them a bunch, it's because of that. Like, most of the conversations that I have with people, they're like, these things are stinking sweet. And I found them while I was walking around on one of our sites, and some of our employees has ordered them. And I walked up into this conversation, and it was just a hell of a good conversation. And then I was looking, and they're playing with these wacky cards, and then I found your name on them. And we took them across the organization. So I've done a really bad job of telling people about our handy dandy little card decks that help you with operational curiosity and learning, and more importantly, being able to do that not just when things go wrong, but pre-event. I get the stories, and man, do I love seeing those things be useful. That's the whole point. They're handy, they're useful, they were created for leaders with leaders, like frontline, pointy-end kind of leaders that wanted something. Like, I don't want another stupid card. I don't want another stupid something I got to wear around my neck or else. I don't want another stupid checklist. I don't want to give me something that, like, doesn't suck and is actually handy. And insert Starting Points here. That's where they were born. So check those out at thehotnerd.com/SP, and you can learn all about our services, my services, over at thehotnerd.com as well. If you're needing a hand with human and organizational performance, any part of that, I can help you, from HOP fundamentals to learning team facilitation to strategy and everything in between, ongoing coaching and consulting and you name it. I'm pretty much doing it. Yeah, with all kinds of organizations all around the globe. And I would love to partner with you and your organization on your HOP journey. Yeah, I would be proud to do that with you. All you got to do is send me an email, thehopnerd@gmail.com. If you're looking for that next keynote conference speaker, happy to come out and help you in any way that I can. What else do I need to tell you before we jump in? Oh, yeah, like, share, subscribe, do all that kind of sort of stuff. I should just hit like a bell notification, something if it's over on YouTube. Make sure you're following YouTube. I go in waves in YouTube. I won't bombard you with videos or anything like that. It's usually like a ton of videos and nothing, a ton of videos and then nothing. Yeah, I've got a TikTok out there. It's kind of the same thing with that. I use it about twice a year. But when I do put stuff on there, there's a bunch. The main place you can find me is on LinkedIn. And then if you want the behind the scenes, director's cut extended play edition of everything that's going on, go follow along on Instagram. It's the Hop Nerd. That's it. Got a ton of cool merch over in the shop. It's a great way to show your love and support for an extremely niche a podcast. We've got all kinds of cool hats. I'm a hat nerd. The hats have to not suck. Yeah, I'm a t-shirt nerd. I'm one of those people that if you put me in a t-shirt I don't like, I'm like tugging on it, pulling on it, stretching it out. It's like t-shirts are disposable for me if it's a sucky t-shirt. Like I'm going to stretch it out, wear it once, and then I'm going to wash it and it's going to turn into a belly shirt. So I'm going to throw it away. So we make t-shirts that don't suck. We make hats that don't suck. We use designs and all kinds of stuff that don't suck because they're designed by artists, like actual artists. Like it's pretty stinking cool. So those things are over there as well. And you can obviously tap into all the free resources. I make a bunch of these funny videos as well. Many of you have been following along on LinkedIn, loving these funny little extreme safety to an extreme kind of comedy videos. The absurdity, highlighting absurdity in our work worlds kind of videos that I make. And the cool thing about those is, and again, things that I get yelled at for not telling you enough about. So starting points, check. The next one is this, the videos. The videos are available. You can not just watch them, but you can go download them. Yeah, I make them. You can download them. Repost them. Like, share them on LinkedIn. Tag me. Like, that's kind of really cool when you tag me and stuff. Plus, I get to like it, and then I can share it, and it's cool. Yeah, like, it's a win-win for all of us. You get a funny video. I can, like, share that farther. Like, people get to see my funny videos. It's a neat little thing. And then, more importantly, the reason why I put them there is a lot of you asked. It's like, hey, I want to use this in the presentation. Is there any way that I can just like not have a link to it? Can I just have the video? It's like, yep, there it is. I'm notoriously slow at uploading those. I have uploaded a large chunk of them, some that I haven't even posted anywhere yet. They are there. And you just go to that little player. It's got that little, what do they call that thing on the side? It's not a hamburger button. I learned that term the other day. That's that little three striped stacky button. Our logo technically with the Hop Nerd is a hamburger dot vertical thing. Click on that and there's a little download option in there and you can just download it right there. I think it just downloads a nice little video file and you can embed it into presentations. You can share it wherever you want to share it. And pretty stinking freaking awesome. Cool. So yeah, with all that out of the way, let's jump into today's episode where we're talking about blame fixes nothing. What now? Well, welcome back to episode number two of our mini-series, our What Now mini-series, an action-oriented walkthrough of the principles of human and organizational performance, of the ideas and concepts of human and organizational performance, and the 10 ideas that we talk about and safety differently, and wherever we want to unpack these things. We're starting with the first five principles. That's probably the right way, but the five principles of human and organizational performance. We'll probably then move into kind of those tenets or key ideas of safety differently. Then we'll move into the 10 ideas from my book, 10 ideas to make safety suck less. And then we'll move into some key ideas around operational curiosity, learning, improvement, and innovation from my latest book, Aren't You Curious? The Operationally Curious Leader. Now, if you listen to the last one, you know exactly where we start this thing off at. And we start it right here. We start it with a bit of a warning. Within our community of practice, as human and organization performance, safety differently, safety too, kind of sort of stuff, we're very, very shy about giving out super duper prescriptive advice, kind of generally and broadly speaking, in formats such as podcasts, for a really good reason, because I don't know you and I don't know your organization. I don't know the context in which your organization operates. So every bit of this kind of action stuff that I'm going to tell you about, I think you should take with a grain of salt, because guess who's the expert on your organization? It's you and the people that work within your organization. If something sounds like you like it, you love it, you got to have more of it. It sounds like a really cool idea. Cool. If it sounds like that won't work for you, Cool. What I'm encouraging you to do here is to truly understand your organization. Yeah. And to then take these kind of really broad, generic ideas for action and shape them and mold them and micro experiment with them and tweak them and tune them and make them your own and make them fit well within your organization. Anybody that comes along and tells you that they have all the answers and the very specific answers, here is the checklist. I have finally solved it and I am here. Just give me $1 million and we will take care of it. They're lying to you. They're lying to you. So I don't know your organization. I know many of your organizations. I know many of you. And every bit of the action that we talk about in our action-oriented series, oh, what now, is focused on things that have actually worked and things that I have actually done with organizations. That doesn't mean it's going to work for you. Now, the other piece of this is don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Duh, 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 duh. We get accused of that a bunch, and that is just simply not true. It is one of those marketing strategies where you try to make anyone talking about anything different look like an absolute idiot, and we are not idiots. No matter how much you try to say, then all those hot people just tell you that you don't need rules and you don't need lockout, tagout. They just tell you just to hug each other, and you know that's not true. But I have to say it. So here's all of that. All of this in this pre-warning. In each one of these episodes, I'm trying to make it shorter. I'm trying to talk fast, but I have to say it because if I don't say it, somebody's going to say, well, Sam said that there's just a list that you just do 1, 2, 3 and hop excellence is yours. It doesn't work that way. There's not some secret handshake where you go wiggity, 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 slap each other's hands, do it behind your back, chest bump, and then boom, you have hop magical powers within your organization. You have to do the work. You have to form fit it to your organization. You. It's a lot of work and it's hard work, but it's work that is worth it. And we're hoping to make that work just a little bit easier for you with giving you some ideas of where to start. Hence, what now? The miniseries where we're unpacking, working our way through each and every single one of these key human and organizational performance ideas, talking about some of the assumptions, because it's always key to talk through that stuff. It's always super duper important, but ending and working our way through the middle all on actions. So today we are focusing on principle number 2. So they are in no particular order. They tend to feed from one into the other. And so we are just working through them from top to bottom. Yeah. Principle number 2, blame fixes nothing. Man, those little noisy poos are making it feel all kind of fancy pants around here for such a little rinky-dink hop podcast. It's not rinky-dink. It is very professional, very uptight. We only speak in a very professional term. I don't know. I want to change it up. Hopefully you like that stuff. I'm just playing. I'm playing with transitions and different things that we do in the podcast. So hopefully that's not too bad. This is a mini-series, after all. We have to make it. Not only is it a bit different than what you're used to, not only is it moving in a kind of more of a structured fashion for this mini-series, what now, an action-oriented walkthrough of blah, blah, blah. And not only is it that, but then we got to make it sound a little different, too. So there you go. Last time we established and we really, really talked about error is normal, and we unpacked a whole bunch of actions, potential actions for you around that principle of error is normal. We talked about how it's just a part of us being humans, this whole being fallible bit, and especially humans working with the wacky, wonky stuff that we work with. Today, we're going to jump into the extremely natural, the extremely human, but deeply underwhelming and flawed human reaction to error. That is blame. As we said, our principle we're unpacking today and moving towards actions you can actually do is blame fixes nothing. Now, I think this is always the right place to start, that acknowledging that blame is normal. Yeah, we don't like that one either. Yeah, blame's normal. To blame is human. To judge is human. To do the whole extremely biased, I would never, since I would never, and they do, they must be horrible, so I must judge and I blame. Yeah, it feels satisfying, doesn't it? It really does. We really like this idea of finding wrongdoers, We really like this, like, kind of like cop and robber mentality. This superhero villain. A hillin is a superhero villain. Yeah. So I think in safety, we're hillins. Yeah. Superhero versus villain. You know, like, it's like I'm Batman and they're horrible. Like, we like that. We like that as people. And what I'm chipping away at here is that it's just normal. I think we have to acknowledge that as people, especially when we see things that challenge our assumptions, that shock us, that scare us, and especially when we are farther away from said thing. So the farther we move away from work, the easier it is for things to seem ridiculous, the easier it is for things to seem malicious, the easier it is for things to seem just plain stupid, the easier it is to just blame it on a person. The farther we move away from the sharp end of work, the easier it is to not see, to not understand, to not empathize, to just say, well, I can see clearly there's a rule. They should have followed the rule. And it's simple as that. Blame them. It's really easy for us when things go wrong to just judge and blame. The problem here, I don't think, is so much that we are blame-oriented creatures. I don't think it's so much that we really, really, really like to judge. Just generally speaking, as much as it is that we don't process and move past that fast. I've been having this conversation a lot lately where it's like, hey, you know, when you feel that like swell up in your tummy and, you know, you kind of turn a little flushed after you encounter some stuff in your work world in particular, hey there, leader, and you feel that desire to like freak the F out, like rip off heads and like kick people for being stupid. That's pretty normal, I think. We all feel that if judgment is normal. In fact, if you tell me that you don't judge, I'm going to judge you for lying to me about judging. Yeah, if you tell me that you don't blame, I'm going to blame you for lying to me about not blaming people. Of course we feel those things, and especially in the situations we were just describing, where things are wonky, weird, it seems stupid, how could they, I would have, they should have, that kind of thing. I don't think it's so much that we should just never feel those things, as much as it's that we should process that feeling of judgment and those desires to blame, to process them and move past them fast, moving towards something that is more productive and more valuable to us, not only as individuals, but obviously as organizations. But it feels so stinking good. It feels so satisfying, doesn't it? When something goes wrong, finding someone to point the finger at, someone to pin it on, someone that can be our nemesis, the person that we can blame. Finding someone to point the finger at, it gives us really this sense of closure. It gives us this feeling that we've taken action, that we have done something. It makes us feel like we've done something. It feels like we've taken action. It feels good just from a human sense of like, I found a villain and I'm going to punish a villain. I'm going to take care of a wrongdoer. It gives us this sense of closure. Even if we've not really fixed anything, we've blamed and we've shamed and we've retrained and we've probably fired. It gives us this feeling that we found the cause being you, and we dealt with it. We fixed you or we fired you. Problem solved. Right? Are you looking for a handy dandy, easy peasy, lemon squeezy kind of way to get conversations flowing around operational reality within your organization? These conversations around work is done versus work is imagined, pain points, problems, even best practices, the good stuff, the great stuff. Well, Starting Points is exactly what you're looking for. Starting Points, the original operationally curious card deck, packed full of a ton of learning focused, operationally curious icebreaker questions to get those conversations flowing, helping your organization to effectively learn, improve, and innovate. Head over to thehopnerd.com/SP to download our free sample deck, to purchase the original card decks and learning journals, or to inquire about licensing options so that you can customize Starting Points with your brand, your logo, and your questions for your specific organization's needs. Again, that's thehopnerd.com/SP. Back to the show. Wrong. So incredibly wrong. Blame feels cathartic. It feels like we've taken action. It feels like it's a pressure relief valve for us, right? We've put it on them. There's nothing for us to do, nothing for us to fix. It was a you problem, definitely not an us problem. It's funny how we do that in our organizations, right? That if it's success, if it's a success, it's always a we succeeded, we succeeded, we succeeded. If things go wrong, it's always a you failed, you failed, you failed. When both are big we's. Yeah, we. Yeah, big we. Yeah, big we energy. I don't. It's all big we energy. Yeah, of course it is. Because if things go wrong, it's a we thing. If things go right, it's a we thing. But that blame, it feels cathartic when we pour it onto people, when we take a we thing and make it a you thing, because it takes away anything that we got to do now. You did it. It's on you. And it's one of the most destructive things we can do in any organization. If we truly, truly value and prioritize learning, improvement, and innovation. It's one of the worst things we can do if we want to be better today than we were yesterday. Now, that's a big question you got to ask yourself, really, really and truly. There's an action right here for you. When we talk about learning, and especially when we talk about pre-event learning, when we talk about learning, improvement, and innovation before things go wrong, it's something that everyone wants, but no one really wants to do. Back to secret handshakes and silver bullets. I want to learn and I want to improve. Not with just with safety. Like, that's good and all. Safety's fun. Like, cool, 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 cool. Safety, safety, safety. Yep, yep. Like it, love it. Gotta have that. But I want innovation. I want cooler products. I want efficiency. And I want safety with that. I want to be a better steward of our environment. I want to take better care of our customers. And I want to do that before it gets to the point of people yelling at me. I want to do that before it gets to the point of, quality escapes that cost me millions of dollars. I want to do that so we can all make more money. I want to do that so we can all make cooler products and live with cooler things. I want to do all that stuff. And I want to innovate. I want to learn from the people that are my SMEs in my organization now. And then you ask them this question. Well, what resources do you put into that? What time do you put into that? How do you actually make that happen? Do you make that possible? And the answer is like, well, I can't do that. That costs entirely too much money. So the question that I'm moving towards is this. Is do you truly value operational learning? Do you truly value pre-event operational learning, improvement, and innovation? Because if you truly value operational learning on the post-event, pre-event side, and everything in between, the learn from normal, everyday, usually successful work thing that we talk so much about, then you will make it just as mission critical as you do anything else that is mission critical within your organization. You prop it up with just as much time, resources, and focus as you do anything else that is mission critical to your business. Now, where I'm going with this is that if we move down this path of blame, of shame, of retrain, of it's a you thing and it's a you problem and we fix problems, so I'm going to fix you, it hinders your ability to learn, improve, and innovate over time. As the world famous, awesome person, GOAT, greatest of all time, a humble opinion here, Todd Conklin has said on numerous occasions, you can either blame or you can learn, or you can't do both. Now, the internet, chock full of lots of bickering and fighting, doesn't like that one anymore. Yeah, I don't like that anymore because the internet thinks you and I are children. They think that we down here on the sharp end of figuring this stuff out, that we just take that at face value, that you say blame fixes nothing. And we immediately translate that into blame free, accountability free, disciplinary action free, that we're kids and we can't understand that there's a deeper conversation beneath that principle. Duh. I'm going to say duh a lot through this. I hope you've prepared yourself for the amount of duh that's going to come out of these conversations. Of course there's a deeper conversation there. Of course there is. Duh, 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 duh. I'm sticking with that. But I'm going to say this. Let me put it to you in a couple different ways. You can either learn or you can blame. You can't do both. And you already heard half of my next answer come out. You can either learn or you can blame. It's really hard to do both. Let's maybe put it into a bit more of a corporate-y sounding something. The over-application of really blame, disguised as things like that we tend to call things like disciplinary action or accountability or Blame Shame Retrain. The over application of that stuff makes it really, really, really hard for us to gain access to the levels of operational information that we need to make sound operational decisions within our organizations, leaving us basically blind to opportunities for learning and improvement, putting us into positions of basically navigating blind because our desires, our very human and normal desires for blame, and then our pursuit of those desires, driving those things all the way to ground to you as the problem, and especially using those in a bunch of situations where we probably shouldn't have used those because blame has become the easy button for our organizations. Lazy button in a lot of ways for organizations. I ain't got no time to go learn about no context. They just broke the rule, and I'm just going to blame. We lose access to information that we need. We do not learn and improve over time. We find ourselves on that world-famous fear loop or blame loop that we talked about during the last episode, where something comes up and we discover that somebody made a mistake, somebody made an error, somebody had a well-intended violation. They broke the rules with good reasons. Who cares? Just blame them. Information is driven underground. We lose access to that information for long periods of time. Those problems don't go away. They fester. They grow. They get worse. And then guess what? Somebody comes along and trips that thing all over again. And we still know nothing about it, and we go right back down that path of blame. What I'm saying with this kind of rambly mess here at this beginning before we really get into our actionable insights from our episode today is that exactly what we just said. The over-application of blame doesn't do us any good. When we put blame at the beginning of everything, the pursuit of blame at the beginning of everything, this unpacking of you should have, you could have, if only you would have, and because you didn't, here's what's going to happen to you. That doesn't do us any good. That's not learning. That's not improving. That's blaming. And as we've established, it's very normal. I think the first step in this, that maybe a bit of an action here, is first understanding that our desires to blame are very normal. We are humans. Leaders are people too, in case someone hasn't told you that lately. When we feel that rising up in our belly, we have to acknowledge it for what it is. It's blame, and it's probably going to be unhelpful to us. Okay, let me set those desires to the side for a second over here. I'm going to kind of put those in a bucket over here in the timeout corner. And I'm going to move towards understanding. This seems wacky. This seems weird. This seems stupid. Let me seek to understand. Let me move closer to the work. Let me understand the operational reality that these people faced in this particular situation on this particular day with all of the organizational factors and societal factors and all the factors, all the factors, all the pressures, all the factors, all the competing goals, the goal complex, all the stuff. Let me seek to understand that. My blame is still over here in the bucket. It's still there in case I need it. But let me try this out first. If you try this out first, you almost always discover that those desires for blame, that judgment and blame, was pretty unfounded. Because somewhere along the way, you start to uncover this thing that we refer to in our world as industrial empathy, this place where you learn so very much that you could easily see yourself in the other person's shoes, making same or similar operational choices, decisions, actions or inactions when presented with same or similar operational information. And you go, huh, not stupid. See how it made sense. We move past those things first. But maybe let's rewind just a quick second and break down some of the problems with blame, some big problems here. The thing is with blame, especially with the overuse of blame, disguised as disciplinary action programs a lot of times as the fix for people, it stops conversations, it stops the flow of operational information up and down and throughout the organization, it stops inquiry dead in its tracks. That's a bad one. We said this already, that we need good, sound, raw, real, accurate, unmassaged operational information to make sound operational decisions as leaders, as organizations. The moment we assign blame, we stop looking for deeper stories. We stop looking for how things made sense. We label the person as the cause. They were careless. They didn't follow the rules. They lost situational awareness. Awareness. Our favorite corporate words in the world. Lost situational awareness, because it means absolutely everything and absolutely nothing at once. It is the perfect corporate speak. And we miss the real problem. We miss the faulty process. We miss the conditions, the shit conditions sometimes that people had to operate in. We miss the fact that people have been doing this work and mostly getting it right, doing the exact same thing that we're now blaming them for. Yeah, we miss the pressures and the conflicting goals. We miss the things that actually set the person up to fail. We miss all this stuff in this long line of problems and issues and frustration points and friction points and inefficiencies and on and on and conflicts and on and on and on and problems and on and on and on and pain points and on and on and on that this person now usually has just found themselves at the end of. They are at the end of this line, now becoming the recipient of all of that stuff. Oh, yeah. They are the person that has been gifted this outcome that we are now going to blame them for. We miss all of that stuff. The real problems remain hidden. And the more we blame, the deeper we hide those problems. Because I know if I bring that problem up, you're just going to blame me for it anyways. The deeper we hide those, and they're still guaranteed to bite someone else. Even if we blame that person, we fix Bob, they're going to bite Jane sometime later. And then we're going to blame Jane. And then we're going to go deeper. And then it's going to blame Joe. And then it doesn't actually fix the problem. Back to the big PS word that I told you. PS to me stands for Photoshop, but I try to avoid psychological safety. And I really think about psychological safety just about the phrase, this phrase where we're creating an environment in which people can tell us the truth. Even when it's inconvenient operational truth, people can tell us the truth. That's what I need as a leader. I don't need you to tell me what I want to hear. I need you to tell me the stuff that maybe I don't want to hear. And I'm going to encourage you to tell me what I maybe don't want to hear real bad by not freaking out and shit my pants when you do. Oh, yeah, psychological safety. Who in their right mind wants to report anything? A mistake, a violation, an error, a near miss, an event, a condition. If they know that the response is going to be freak out, if they know that it's going to be more headache than it's worth, if they know that it's going to result in blame and pain and punishment, nobody, you included. If you say that you would do it anyways because it's the right thing to do, you're lying. You're just absolutely lying. Of course you wouldn't. Blame teaches us to hide information, to keep quiet, to shut our mouths, to cover our tracks. As organizations, as leaders, we lose that invaluable information about where things are going wrong, about where the next failure is probably going to happen. We lose sight of, again, overused term, but something that we refer to in our world as faint signals, those whispers of failure in motion. We lose access to that information through our desire to lie, to freak out, to panic, to shit ourselves. We lose access to said information, meaning that we will not hear about those signals. We will not hear that things are going wrong, failure in motion. It's not gone wrong, but it's actively going wrong. It's not failed, but it is actively failing. We won't hear that. We'll just hear, boom, it blew up. Boom, it caught on fire. Boom, we've lost all production for the next year. We can't do anything that will stand in the way of that information that we need. If it encourages people to shut up, it is bad for us. If it creates silence in our organization, it is bad for us. If it tells people that don't tell the boss the truth, it's bad for us. Duh. Yeah, there's the next duh. As we've said, it prevents learning. To get over the internet keyboard warriors, I'm going to say that it makes it really, really hard to gain access to the operational information that we need, especially the overuse of blame, maybe the misappropriation of blame. Is that a better way to say it? Where we pour down and we really use our disciplinary action processes in areas where we probably shouldn't. We use it as kind of the easy button for the organization. There's this old saying, right, that we kick around that's like, you know, an undisciplined employee that really needs disciplined is bad for the entire. Yeah, probably. Yeah, you're probably right. But over-discipline is worse. Like disciplining everyone and never extending any understanding or grace or seeking to understand, making people think that you were just like the iron-fisted ruler of said organization. It makes you a tyrant, not a boss. Yeah, big difference. Yeah, big difference if you don't know that. it makes it really hard to learn. Yeah. If mistakes are hidden, if context isn't explored, if we can't get opportunities to learn pre-event, if we can't hear about this kind of sort of stuff, hey, I'm having a real problem with this. We got to break the rule to get this done. Hey, yeah, we got to do that. And I know it's against the rules, or I know it might not be one of the best practices. If we can't hear about the good, the bad, the ugly, the scary, the weird, the strange, how could we possibly learn? Well, we can't. Blame creates a barrier there. It creates this fear. It creates this environment where opportunities for learning are hidden deep, 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 deep underground in the organization. Improvement requires starting points. It requires understanding. And blame, this judgment and blame, it actively prevents our ability to understand. Next up is it wastes energy. It wastes time. It wastes resources. Think about the time and resources spent on finger pointing, on defending these positions, on writing these kind of CYA emails, on managing the emotional fallout of blame, on this whole bucket of just like CYA crap. That energy is far better invested in learning and improving together, in collaboratively understanding problems and developing real solutions. Hell, it's a hell of a lot better spent on like, I don't know, coming up with cool innovations on how we can actually do awesome things. Yeah. Blame is a bit of the organizational equivalent of seeing like a check engine light on your car. Like, hey, you've got something going on here. Something's wrong. And then just putting like some black electrical tape over it. Or if you're, you know, real industrious, some duct tape, because it solves all the world's problems. It's probably duct tape. Yeah, it feels more like duct tape. Putting some duct tape over it. You've hidden the indicator. You've driven those sounds underground, those faint signals underground, but you haven't actually fixed the engine. You just punished Bob. You just fired Bob. The engine's still going to blow. Now, another thing that I think that we need to maybe quickly unpack before we move into our actions and kind of key points here is this. This is critical distinction between saying blame fixes nothing and zero accountability. Blame fixes nothing does not equal anything goes. Blame fixes nothing does not mean like, hey, this means no disciplinary action anymore. Hell yeah, buddy. Like, that's not what blame fixes nothing means. People try to reduce this idea of blame fixes nothing into that bucket of, well, what those crazy hot people are saying, this is usually extremely traditional folks, what they're really saying is that we can't punish people. We can't blame people ever. We can't use disciplinary action ever. All that means the same thing to me. Accountability, culpability, blame, that just means me beating people. Well, there's a huge difference between those things. Yeah, saying blame fixes nothing is not the same thing as saying anything goes. There's a huge difference between this kind of counterproductive idea of blame and shame, judgment, and fair and constructive accountability, or even disciplinary action. Blame is often this retrospective and emotional and focused on punishment, this error. It frequently ignores context. It assumes that people are bad. We're blaming you because we think you're a bad person. We talked about that rotten onion during our last episode. If you really peel most of this idea of blame back down to its core of that rotten onion, what you really discover is we're saying bad people. Yeah, because if you were a good person, you wouldn't have done that bad thing. So you're a bad person. Bad people do bad things, and bad people deserve bad things to happen to them. Insert me with the big stick beating you in the head here. But our people aren't bad. Right, so blame moves towards this idea of people that have errors and mistakes and violations, that they're incompetent, that they're stupid, that they're bad actors. You don't need an investigation. You don't need to learn and improve if you're dealing with a shithead, if you're dealing with somebody with bad intent. Blame is about making someone feel responsible in a negative way. And usually that negative way is through pain. Accountability and even fair discipline, on the other hand, it's not that. It's forward looking. It's how do we prevent this from happening again? How do we support better performance? What do you need? I will get you what you need. It's based on clear expectations and established processes. And crucially, it considers context and intent. And it really differentiates between this idea that like blame and accountability and responsibility. It's not, it makes those things different because they are different. If you think about it like this, especially with that blame and accountability thing, it seems like the more that we blame, kind of broadly speaking, the lower accountability is in our organizations. Because if you're blaming willy-nilly, and again, we're rolling all those words together because that's what our organizations do. The illity words in most organizations, especially traditional organizations, just mean blame them, beat them, shame them, fire them, write them up, put the letter in their file, but blame the crew that was around them because they should have stopped them. It means that. If our organizations are really, really, really focused on blame, accountability goes down because I don't trust you. I cannot give my account. I cannot share information with you. And I get really, really, really good, not at telling you more because you're beating me, but hiding and avoiding you and telling you less. Now, the better we get at moving beyond our initial desires for judgment and blame and moving towards learning and improving, the more that we get better at very judiciously using our disciplinary action policies where they count, where they should be used, using performance improvement where it should be used, using kind of like ongoing coaching and correction and leader stuff where it actually should be used, accountability tends to go up. When we stop just blaming because it's the easy button, we actually move away from blame altogether and move towards true accountability. Yep, people can actually tell you stuff. People feel more accountable, not less. They act more accountable, not less. So I think it's an important thing to kind of start to pry those things apart. I mean, that's a full probably mini series just on those things, but important to talk about, important to highlight. I want to move towards the idea of just culture just a little bit here. And we think about this from the lens of, did somebody make a mistake? Like that generic operator substitution test. I don't like this term, honest mistake, simple mistake. I think a mistake is a mistake. I tend to put mistakes in this bucket of I intended my actions, but I did not intend the outcome, so I had good intent. That's a mistake. That's not a malicious act in any way. And I like to insert that kind of generic operator substitution test. If I put in another operator here, could this still happen? Not would. But could this still happen? And if the answer is yeah, that could still happen, you likely don't have a person problem. Just a good basic test. Not always right, but a pretty good little test there for you. But if you do have a mistake, the response should be support. It should be, how do we make that mistake less likely to occur? Or the consequence from that mistake, how do we make that far less catastrophic? How do we bring that down into the acceptable range? Same thing with an error. I would tell you same thing with a well-intended violation. Another thing here, another way to look at it, if someone took a shortcut, if someone moved away from a procedure, first assume that they had good reason to do that, perhaps because the rule was inefficient, or maybe it was, everybody's doing it, or maybe as we've talked about in the previous episode with well-intended violations, a lot of times I violate with good intent. I violate to get work done for you and your organization. We have to remember that. I'm not here for just funsies. I'm here doing work for you. And if I don't get said work done, then I will get fired faster than just about anything else. That rule quite literally prevents me from doing this. So I have to bend it. I have to break it. On top of that, a lot of times it's a wink, wink, nod, nod. Like, you know, we got that rule, but you know that I got to skirt around it a little bit. And we just kind of like acknowledge it without saying a word. And then things go wrong with it. I create a whole bunch of success, but then things go wrong with it. And now you're going to blame me for violating a rule that you knew that I violated, at least had a pretty good idea that I was violating with good intent, creating good work. Is it one of those things where everybody's bending that rule? Is everybody breaking the rule? Or we got to break that thing? Of course, coaching. Of course, we can put coaching in here. Of course, we should think about this thing. We should understand how it made sense. We should focus on fixing the rule, not the person. Fixing the process, fixing the system, clarifying the rule. Blame hinders understanding how that made sense or how it was necessary or why it was acceptable. And then you get to this point of what many traditional organizations tend to refer to as reckless or intentional behaviors. What I want to put in here is this. Is that, again, I think there is a well-intended violation because a well-intended violation to me is just a mistake. I have good intent. I have to bend this. I have to break this to get stuff done. But nothing is as important as safety at work. Okay, but work. Yeah. I don't know if you've heard this lately, but unless you're in maybe a safety consulting business, your company doesn't make safety for a living. Dramatic pause. It doesn't. You make insert whatever you do here for a living. You make widgets. You make telephone poles. You create power. You create dangerous chemicals. I don't know what you do. But safety is not your primary business. It's not how you make money. Without said money, the need for safety completely goes away because there's no business to be safe in. And now, I think that it is always important to acknowledge that people are doing things that are making sense to them, that they're trying to create operational efficiency, that they are trying to get work done, and they almost always kick ass at that, that they almost always create safe and stable operational outcomes, that they almost always get it right, and that they occasionally get it wrong. There's a big difference between that, like me bending a rule because like it's one of those ventilation dilations we talked about. It's one of those rules that everybody bends. Like it's one of those operational things that like we're beating on that thing with a hammer, even though that's the wrong tool for the job and it's technically against the rules, but the thing stops. Then we all go home for 2 weeks and none of us get paid. There's a big difference between that and screw you, I do what I want. Yeah, if you have that thing where you have started, you have moved all the way through this whole seeking to understand thing, you've put your blame in that bucket over there in the corner, you've suspended judgment, you've moved towards learning and improvement, you get deep into this thing, and you can't quite develop industrial empathy because you're hearing, screw you, I do what I want. That's dumb. Why would I use lockout and tagout? I just turned it off. Well, did you know that you could die? Did you know that, like you should have? Oh, yeah, I'm not going to waste time on that. Well, why? Screw you. I do what I want. Well, but I told you specifically to do. You can probably pull out your discipline bucket. And probably rightly so. Yeah, story time. Story time. Oh, hey, there's a sound effect. Story time. For a lot of you that have sat through my keynotes, there's a story that I've been sharing a bunch. Shared it all over the country last year. Talking about an error with a lockout tagout. And I won't give away too much of the story if you've never heard it. Again, if you want to hear the keynote, you see me out speaking somewhere, come listen to it. If it is this particular keynote that I'm talking about. But to kind of the short of it all, is that an operator, hanging a lockout tagout, locked something out in the wrong position. Yeah. Another operator walked it down and verified it. A leader walked it down. And, you know, it wasn't a requirement that they like check point by point by point by point by point, but they walked down, examined the work. Everything looks good. But it was wrong. Yeah. They had locked out a piece of equipment in the wrong configuration, i.e. they had locked it out more in the onsy side of things than the offsy side of things. The organization went down this path, not of blame, shame, and retrain, but of seeking to understand and learning from those nearest to the event. The operator. Yeah, the operators. Can you believe it? Instead of just locking a bunch of subject matter experts, in some corporate safety office somewhere and say, what can we do to them? Yeah, they actually learned with them, and they learned how to improve with them. Now, not to give away again too much of the story, because I tell the story a whole bunch, and I don't want you to say, I heard this on the podcast. Yeah, I got to keep some of that thunder, right? So we're hanging out in person. But during some of these post-event learning sessions, one of the operators asked this question. Well, why in the hell can you lock that thing out in the wrong position to begin with? Good question. Yeah, that seems like we could make that far less likely for this type of error to occur. We know how we lock out this equipment. This was a static plant. Like, this stuff doesn't change too much. We know we hang this lockout tag out. At least we have plans. We have pictures and diagrams of this stuff. Like, it's not changing. It's not changing. So why can't we just, like, change that to where there's no lockout point for it to be in the onsy position? The only lockout point is in the offsy position. So when you go lock it, you go, oh, shit, I had this in the wrong. Boom. Nailed it. With this particular story that I'm sharing a bit with you, this employee, no disciplinary action, none whatsoever. I mean, they went home, like they fled site, like they thought they were going to get blamed because this organization was only a few years into their home journey. And in the past, they would have been blamed. Their previous employer, they would have been blamed, shamed, fired, done. Like the employee, basically, when they found out they made a mistake, They were not asked to leave. They were not suspended, but they went home. They cleared out their locker and went home, and they waited by the phone, waiting on the call to say, hey, it's not us. It's you. You're terrible. Don't come back. But that phone call never came. Instead, this employee received a phone call along with their crew to come back to site and to do the opposite of what they thought they were going to be asked to do, to be part of something that we refer to around these parts here as a learning team. Yeah, and this is where that question came up and where this idea for improvement came up. And they come up with a bunch of other cool stuff. They were actively involved. They were accountable. And not only was it that, but they were kind of in this place of like, hey, you know, it went wrong for you. Fix it. Teach us how to fix it. Let's us fix this together. It's kind of like that old thing like when I broke a window as a kid. Like, I don't get to like run away and get fired. Like, I don't get to, like, never go play baseball again. I don't get banned from things or blacklisted. You know, that's not going to happen. I was pulled over here and said, you fix it. And that's kind of sort of what happens in these situations. Not fired at all. Now, and not blamed, not shamed, not punished. A very cool, very restorative, learning-focused, improvement-focused experience all the way around for the employees involved, for the organization, for everyone in between. It was just a wild success story for this organization. And they made it less likely that people would get lockout tagouts wrong. And what that means, if you don't know this, is they made it less likely that people would die within their organization. That's pretty stinking cool. All started for this idea that we've been talking about. Now, here's the other side of that. A couple months later in this same organization, they had a lockout tagout event and they fired the employee. Yeah. Now, when I say that, you go, oh, they screwed it. I don't think they screwed it up. Now, let me explain the difference intent, the difference this person was out there doing their work and they're figuring out and they had an error. They didn't intend for that to happen. They had one of those things where it's like, holy crap, I did what? The other example, the employee was told by their leader multiple times, hey, I know that this is like this quick clean out thing. And I know that it feels like lockout tagout might be over the top for this. Because you can just pop in there, you can turn off that local thing, you can jump in there, and all will be well. All will be well, maybe. And the employee said, yes, 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 lockout, tagout, lockout, tagout, lockout, tagout. Guess what they didn't get? A lockout, tagout. It basically, in all the conversations with the employee came down to, I'm not doing that, that's dumb, screw you, I do what I want. I think there's a big difference in those two stories. Yeah, I don't know about you, but I think there's a huge difference in those two stories. And that's the exact difference that we're talking about here with story time, story time, story time, story time. Yeah, I'm not going to put the sound effect back in on you. I'm sorry. But there's a big difference in those things, a massive difference in those things. Okay, so enough talking about how blame fixes nothing and giving you story time and these great kind of pieces around. It's gray, right? It's not this or that. It's not blame fixes nothing. It's all blame. It's all learning. It's all discipline. It's no discipline. We're talking about the true gray murkiness of what this actually looks like in practice. But enough about the principle itself. Let's start talking about some actions. Back to better questions. Instead of saying who failed, ask what failed. This echoes directly from our last chat with Principal Numero Uno from our last episode. When things go wrong, make your immediate default response curiosity. Instead of who failed, who can I blame, who can I fix, what? What went wrong? I love this because this who versus what thing, what I really appreciate about it is if I go towards who, if I say who did it, it always takes me towards who can I fix. The problem with that is you can't fix people. So what I'm saying is when I go down this path of who, it always takes me towards things that aren't actually feasible. It takes me towards things I can't actually put my hands on, short of strangling someone. Like and that still doesn't fix it because it can still happen again, and it will happen again to someone else after I have strangled said person. Who takes me towards things that I can't do anything about outside of my control? Because I can't fix people. I can't. What I have always appreciated about this is that it takes me towards things I can literally put my hands on. conditions I can actually improve, things I can tweak and tune and modify and check and adjust and micro-experiment with. It takes me towards physical things, like actual corrective actions. Back to the point made at the beginning, who, leading towards blame, shame, retrain, fire, feels like we're doing a lot, but you're not doing jack shit. You're doing nothing. And you're doing worse than nothing, because you actually are doing something. You're just telling everyone else to shut the F up. What takes me towards things I can put my hands on? I can fix that thing that eats people. I can make that thing less likely to eat fingers. I can make it far easier for work to go right and far harder for work to go wrong. I can change by learning with you, said person nearest to the work. Big we energy here. I'm going to stick with big we energy. I think that's a good t-shirt. We're going to see that t-shirt in the shop pretty soon. But through us learning together, we can create better operational outcomes by focusing on the things, these what's, these things that we can actually improve. Next up is this idea of separating learning reviews and disciplinary actions and safety investigations. Like, these things should be torn apart. I think it's for the best for all of us. I shared this during the last one. I told you I was going to share it again. But our safety investigation processes, one of the first things that you can do here, because almost always on the first page, usually within the first couple bullet points, there's a question about, did somebody mess up? And if somebody messed up, you as the leader working your way through this investigation, thou shalt discipline this person that messed up, whether it was an error, a mistake, a violation, insert anything here, doesn't matter. Context aside, this is black and white. Doesn't matter if you find that anyone made any errors of any kind or mistakes of any kind, then you must discipline that employee in accordance with said chart based on potential severity of outcome. And if you don't, leader, you're going to get it. When we put that stuff, when we front load blame into processes that are supposed to be about learning, you never get to the learning part because you find nothing but opportunities for blame. Echoing what we said during our last episode, this is a physical something you can do right now. Open up that Word doc, because I know you probably have the editable version of the procedure, and take that bullet point for blame, or you might just call it disciplinary action, and move it to the complete opposite side of that procedure, dead last. And everything in between the beginning and that last bullet point, the dead end of blame, should say something along the lines of seeking to understand, how did this make sense? What went wrong? Not who failed, what failed. It should be all about going up and out, understanding the context and the conditions, setting in which people must operate, and on and on and on. And if you get to the end of all that, and you get to that bullet on blame and you go, you know what? I think we actually have a person problem. You might just have a person problem. The problem with putting it first is it makes every problem a person problem, even if it's not a person problem. If you put it at the end, at the very least, it put it on the other side of understanding at the very least, the very, very, very least. You come to that conclusion with a whole bunch more information in hand. You probably find where you should use these processes instead of using them for everything else. To our point on separating these things, and I think that's a bit of a way of separating, is your investigations, your safety investigation policy, your incident investigation policy, none of this should move towards disciplinary action. None of this should move towards any of those things. You already have performance management processes. It being a safety something doesn't make it a super duper special performance management issue. If you've got performance management processes, why do you need to delineate, to carve out specific safety performance? You shouldn't. You shouldn't. Keep those things separate. If you've got a problem with performance with an employee as a leader and you need to manage performance, use your performance management something. It shouldn't be a super duper special sacred safety performance management something. It just makes it worse. It doesn't work very well. Carve out separate things for learning teams and learning reviews, right? And as we said, you've already got that disciplinary action and accountability kind of stuff. And if you get to that point, make sure that those processes are just and that they really, really focus not on causing more harm to someone that's already hurt, probably. Even if that person's a screw you, I do what I want person, you should still treat them justly. You should still treat them fairly. You should still give them a road or a pathway to redemption. You should still give them the opportunity. All the basic stuff that we know works well in that world of disciplinary action and performance management. Action number three. I would encourage you to adopt and communicate some of this just culture framework. You don't need some complex chart or flow chart, but leaders in teams usually do need a shared understanding, right? So I like to put things into these basic buckets. I don't really like this thing of like well-intended error, not well-intended error. I think an error is an error. Yeah, I think if you say a well-intended mistake, a mischievous mistake, a not well-intentioned mistake, I think both of those things are mistakes. Because let me explain here a bit. For me, an error is one of those things, typically. And again, these buckets are just generic. It's just a framework of how to think about these things. Error. I did not intend my actions. I definitely didn't intend that outcome because I didn't even intend my actions. Yeah, those are those, holy crap, I did what? Yeah, I locked that out in what configuration? It's those things. A mistake is I intended my actions, but I had good intent. I was doing this for the best of reasons. I had great reasons to do this. I was doing this trying to get that done. I intended my actions, but I did not intend that outcome. Mistake. Yeah. So when we get into this world of talking about well-intentioned violations, I intended my actions. But I intended to bend that rule, break that rule, because we always have to bend or break that rule or insert whatever here that makes a ton of sense. I did not intend that outcome. A well-intended violation is just another way of saying somebody made a mistake. Now, you also then get into this like sabotage kind of world of like, I don't care. Screw you. I do what I want. F you, man. Not my boss. I would tell you those people probably don't fit into your organization if that's not the norm. That's probably not where they fit in. So carving out at least some of those buckets helps you to have a bit of a lens, a bit of a framework on how to think of those things. And then really thinking about how your organization will respond to each of those said things. I don't think blaming and shaming and panicking and melting down over error mistakes or well-intended violations, aka mistakes, does as much of any good. If we're carving out what that looks like, it shouldn't be shit our pants and behead people. No. If we want to learn and improve and innovate over time, those things have to be learning opportunities, not career-ending offenses. When you get into that other bucket that we were discussing, ill intent, acting with malice, the screw you, I do what I want, back to our story of two tales of lotto problems. One of those falls into the first category as we talked about. The other one falls into the screw you, I do what I want bucket. I think that's where you pull out your handy dandy, extremely well-written, fair, and just disciplinary action policy, and you work your way through that thing because that person probably doesn't belong in your organization. Yeah. So does this sound a whole bunch like those crazy hot people just say that disciplinary action should never exist, that they're just trying to take away our stick, that they think we people just go crazy, they do what they want, and us as leaders just shouldn't exist? Is that really what that sounds like? I don't think so. But with that said, let's move on to the next bit of action here. Focus on actual system problems. Focus on condition fixes. Focus on things that we can actually improve. Who takes us towards the fuzzy stuff that we can't actually fix? Yeah. It feels like we're fixing stuff because it feels like we're being super duper harsh around safety and like we're teaching people that you better take this. No, you're just telling people to shut up. If we move towards things that we can actually fix, that's the what question. We can actually improve those things. Action number five is leaders must model this stuff. This stuff starts at the top. If me on the shop, in the shop doing my thing, blame doesn't fix anything. That's cool. But the rest of the organization probably isn't looking to me to set the tone for blame. If the COO the next safety event that you have, not to ruin your day, but you're going to have one of these days, when they like just start axing everybody down through the organization and just like yelling and screaming and throwing chairs, that sets a pretty big tone down through the organization. Leaders have to consciously avoid finger pointing. They have to publicly discuss their own fallibility. They have to publicly move towards that what and away from who. And if you find that it is a who thing, it's always there. You can come back to it. They have to ask better questions. They have to champion this stuff. If leaders resort to blame, no one else is going to feel safe. They set that tone. Now, I had an interesting conversation around this one in particular. Sorry, I got to get some coffee in here before my voice goes. We've been doing these long ones. This is like an hour right now. But a really great conversation with a leader around something in this particular subject. And it was kind of this. It was like, yeah, like I get this stuff now, but how do I get my leaders, my managers, my junior directors, how do I get them to stop this stuff? How do I get them to be more curious? How do I get them to stop bringing me these answers? Because what they do is they bring it to me, because in the past, this is what I wanted. I wanted them to blame and shame and fire people. They bring this to me and they say, hey, I blame and shame and fire. Like, well, you've changed the expectations on them. Yeah, so they're just trying to live up to what they have learned in the past that they should live up to with you. They're bringing you the information that you wanted to hear before, probably because you would only allow them to bring you the information that you wanted to hear before. If they brought you something a little bit more curiosity-driven, you'd have probably said, why didn't you fire them? And they're like, yeah, you're probably right. Well, communicate that new expectation. Like, communicate it clearly. Like, I know this is where I was at. Be vulnerable. I was wrong. We've discovered that that blame-shame thing, like, that's the last resort, not the first resort. That disciplinary action thing, that's the last resort, not the first resort. I want you to focus on learning and improvement and getting this context and this story. Here's another action. Set those expectations, senior leaders. And when people bring you that boring story of somebody messed up, challenge it. Seriously. Those people are going to bring you what you want them to bring you. Does that make sense? I think that kind of makes sense. If the accepted line has been, I fired them, we're done, that's where you're starting, if that's the line that you set before. But if you change those expectations and then they bring you, hey, you know, Jane just messed up because she's stupid, and you say, I don't think that that's probably true. I mean, if that is true, that can be true, but if that's the path we're going to go down, I really want to make sure that's true. Go see if you can find something more interesting there. Guess what they do? They go find something more interesting almost always, and they bring you something more interesting. You do that a couple times, and people start to realize. Your direct report starts to realize that those old answers just aren't palatable to them anymore. Yeah, set those expectations. Set that tone. I say demand is probably a harsh word here, but model that. Show people that those answers don't cut it anymore. We're looking for something more interesting. So there you go. That's a bit of an exploration, I think, into blame. We could talk about this one for days, but we're over an hour already, and I'm starting to lose my voice. Let's do a little bit of a quick recap right here. First on deck, I think I want to say this. Accept the gray. Yeah. So as much as we do love those isms, that blame fixes nothing, fool, stop, we also have to unpack this idea that like blame and all the illity words and our desires for like quick and easy actions and answers, even if they're not all that curative, there's a lot going on there. And that if we do stop at blame fixes nothing and think that that means like, well, we just let our organizations run amok, do whatever the hell you want, like even if you're a bad actor, like that's not true. And no one in this community is telling you that that's true. At least no one with any street cred in this community is telling you that is true. So accept the gray. Real events rarely fit into neat black and white little boxes, little narratives. There's a bunch of stories happening there and a bunch of stories happening at once. Seeking to understand all of those stories, that's on us. That's a big part of what's on us as organizations. Resisting blame means accepting these nuances. It means using thoughtful inquiry and thoughtful frameworks like just culture and operational learning and learning teams. to navigate these gray areas between what we might see as mistakes and violations or as, oh, horrible violations on the surface. But then understanding, like, wait a second, this totally made sense. We need to go down that path rather than just defaulting to blame, 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 easy, because the rules might be black and white, but works never black and white, which leads us to another one of our bullet points here, a wrap up. Blame is destructive. Yeah, overall, blame is destructive. While it's satisfying, it stops learning. It makes it really hard to learn, at the very least. We always must start kind of in this learning mode and move that blame level or disciplinary action level, whatever we want to call it in our organization, to the far other end of the process, giving us all of that operational information that we need. The raw, the real, the ugly, the scary, the good, the bad, the weird, the strange. Operational information. Giving us all of that operational information before we get to even thinking about that lever. Because if we're going to pull that lever of disciplinary action, we want to make damn sure that it is the right lever to pull, or else it's going to cause us a lot more problems than it ever gives us any benefit. Bullet point number two, blame versus accountability. What we're really doing here is we're distinguishing this really harmful and not so useful element of blame from fair accountability, you know, like true accountability, like accountability being something that you can't really do to people. It's an environment that you create. Discipline being this last resort kind of just approach, giving people this road to redemption, all the kind of basic little pieces of a good, fair, just disciplinary action process within our organization, which considers context and intent of all that stuff. Blame fixes nothing to me is really saying that first and foremost, above all else, we're focused on creating an environment in which people can tell us the truth. Because without this truth, without that good, weird, raw, weird, I know I'm getting hung up on weird here. We're an hour and so many minutes into this thing. I apologize. But maybe you get the point. Without this operational information, this raw and real and unmassaged operational truth, even when that operational truth is inconvenient, without all that stuff, we don't have good information to make good decisions. And as a leader, without good information, I'm kind of navigating in the blind here. Yeah, so that's really what we're talking about with blame fixes nothing. That does not mean that we have zero disciplinary action. That's not what that means. Anybody telling you that that's what anybody in this community is saying that we mean, they're wrong. Just culture and these kind of buckets, as much as I don't like the bucket, sometimes it's helpful to our organizations. We talked about these ideas where I did not intend my actions. I did not intend the outcome. Mistake. I intended my actions. I did not intend the outcome. Willful or not willful or all the other kind of buckets we like to put in with the big V word, the big violation word. I'm just going to call this well-intended violations. That's for me. To me, well-intended violation, I intended my actions. I did not intend the outcome. I was doing that because that's what I needed to do to get work done, a.k.a. that's a mistake. There's a big difference between all of that stuff and screw you, I do what I want. Back to our little bit of a story earlier. Story time, yeah. Blame reduces accountability. If I'm fearful that I'm going to get blamed, shamed, and retrained, I'm just going to hide stuff from you. I can only tell you what you allow me to tell you. If you blame, shame, and retrain, it is on you that I'm not telling you stuff, even if you've got a rule, or else that I have to tell you that stuff. It makes me less accountable. It makes me respect you a whole bunch less. It makes me respect the organization a whole bunch less. It makes me feel a whole lot less accountable. It moves me to avoid responsibility. It hinders true accountability within our organizations, and it moves me away from owning problems and solutions. Some of the key actions that we talked about, we're not going to unpack these. You've got a rewind button. You can go back there and check those out. The big one that I want to leave you with is this idea of who versus what. Move towards what. What can be improved? What went wrong? It takes us towards things that we can actually put our hands on, rather than who taking us towards trying to cure people of their humanity. Formally separate these things. Disciplinary action. And there shouldn't be a safety disciplinary action. You just should have a disciplinary action. There shouldn't be a safety performance improvement something. It should be performance improvement if you have performance improvement. Yeah. And communicate all this stuff. And communicate it really well. Make sure it's open and transparent. and all the basics there. Leaders need to model all this stuff, and especially model this move towards working on the things that we can actually work on instead of trying to cure people of their humanity, moving towards improving conditions rather than trying to fix people or cure them of this humanity. Leaders have to model this resisting to move down the easy peasy lemon squeezy path of just blame and move on with life, the easy button kind of approaches. We have to show that, and we have to model that, and we have to live up to that. And when we do, we start to create this environment in which people can actually tell us the truth. Even when that operational truth is inconvenient, they feel safe enough to share that information up through our organizations. They feel accountable, and they feel that they want to be a part of not only sharing the good, the bad, the ugly, the scary, the weird, the strange, but being a part of working with you to make that all that much better. So there you go. There's episode number 2 in the books of our What Now, an action-oriented something around the principles and ideas of human and organizational performance. I will direct your attention back to the warning at the beginning of our episode. They're all just ideas, things that I've seen work and work well. Ooh, I forgot the other action about moving the disciplinary action lever all the way to the other side of your process, encouraging learning and improving first rather than encouraging blame and shame first. Yeah, because if you encourage blame and shame, that's where you're always going to end. If it's the first step in your process, you're never going to get beyond it because you're always going to find it. Sorry, I forgot that one. But there you go. Episode number 2 is in the books. And we will get like hot and heavy and ready and, working on our next episode coming up here pretty soon. And I look forward to it. I hope that you're enjoying these things. Let me know what you think about them. TheHopNerd@gmail.com. If there's any particular story or something that you want to share or a particular piece of this that you want me to talk about, then just maybe we might just talk about it. On our next episode, we're going to be diving into principle number 3, bullet point 3, because there's not actually numbers on these. But learning is vital, right? Organizations have to be deliberate and focused on learning, not only from events, but from when everything's going well. We'll unpack that on episode number 3 of our mini series, What Now? Until next time, it is Sam Goodman, the Hop Nerd, getting ready to sign off. Make sure you check out Starting Points. I think you're going to like them. I think you're going to love them. I think you're going to have more of them. You can find out more about Starting Points at thehopnerd.com/SP. That's thehopnerd.com/SP and thehopnerd.com for all things human and organizational performance, consulting, resources, and more. And you can get a hold of me at thehopnerd@gmail.com. Until next time, it is Sam Goodman signing off. Love you. Mean it. Bye, everybody. Bye. Thanks for listening, everybody. We greatly appreciate all of your support of the Hop Nerd Podcast and the Hop Nerd LLC. If you need a little bit of help of bringing human and organizational performance to life, if you would like to take your efforts around learning and improving to the next level, yep, I can help with that. Head over to www.thehopnerd.com or send me an email, thehopnerd@gmail.com. Until next time, bye, everybody. Bye. Are you looking for a handy-dandy, easy-peasy, lemon-squeezy kind of way to get conversations flowing around operational reality within your organization? These conversations around work is done versus work is imagined, pain points, problems, even best practices, the good stuff, the great stuff. Well, Starting Points is exactly what you're looking for. Starting Points, the original operationally curious card deck, packed full of a ton of learning-focused, operationally curious icebreaker questions to get those conversations flowing, helping your organization to effectively learn, improve, and innovate. Head over to thehopnerd.com/SP to download our free sample deck, to purchase the original card decks and learning journals, or to inquire about licensing options so that you can customize Starting Points with your brand, your logo, and your questions for your specific organization's needs. Again, that's thehopnerd.com/SP. Back to the show.